Hello.
Podcast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Bowman?
Approach and identify.
Hello.
In the summer of 1787, 55 men would gather in the city of Philadelphia. They were tasked with fixing the government of the United States. Over the next 4 months, they would debate, discuss, argue, and refine the first document of its kind in all of history, an attempt to show that men can rule themselves by law. This is the story of those men and those times. This is Constitution Thursday, a time we set aside to read, discuss, study, debate, and learn about the Constitution of the United States, what it meant when it was written, why it was written that way, what it means now, and how it affects our lives each and every day. Here's how you can participate. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And on the web and social media, just search for Constitution Thursday.
The president shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1 of the United States Constitution. Appropriate today because, well, it's in the news, isn't it? Welcome aboard, my cheese-loving friends. It is plausibly live. It is me, Dave. You want to join me, as I said, 565-DAVE. Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. Hello, qui conizio. The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. So, I mean, I guess there's really no other place to start. Can the president pardon himself or not? Oddly enough, the answer to that question for you has more to do with your politics than your actual understanding of the Constitution. As we shall see, if you are a Trump supporter, you no doubt believe that the president can pardon himself. If you are an anti-Trump person, what do they call themselves? Resistors. Which is kind of funny to me, because to me a resistor is something that causes a voltage drop. But anyway, if you are a resistor, you no doubt think that he cannot pardon himself. And so the question is, can the president pardon himself? Yes or no? And who do you believe? Who do you go to in all this? I had an interesting conversation last night with a listener who posted something that was, I got to be careful how I say this. It was not scientifically inaccurate. It was, however, scientifically biased. And because of that bias, it could cause confusion. And so I got into a conversation with him about that. And one of the things I said was, you know, we're generalists, all of us. We are not scientists, so we don't know. How would we know? We have to go through the evidence on both sides and pick something out and determine for ourselves, based on our own experience, our own logic, what the correct answer is. And it may not be what we want it to be. That's the problem with science and philosophy, and even history to a degree. Sometimes the answers aren't what we want them to be. And do we have the maturity to accept that? Do we have the wherewithal to say to ourselves, well, I wish it weren't this way, but it is. And I pointed out the fact that, you know, for a moment, talk about global warming. One side tells me it's a hoax. One side tells me it's a scientific fact. How would I know? I mean, seriously, if you took everything out of the equation and just took yourself, how would you know? What in your observation and your experience tells you that it is or isn't? I could go to the North Pole and look, but what would I see? And how would I know what I was looking at? I don't have the training, the background. I don't have the history with it. I don't know. Maybe it's melted. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it is melting. Maybe it's freezing. How would I know? Except that I have two sides telling me the data points mean different things. And so I have to, for myself, take those data points and decide. And we run into kind of the same thing here, because the Constitution says, quote, the president shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. That's it. That's all it has to say about it. It's interesting because when you go back to the convention, when they started dealing with this idea of the offices of the presidency, it was something that had never been done before. And we've talked about this at length before on Constitution Thursday, both in the 2013 episodes and in the convention episodes. Nobody had ever heard of anything like this. Nobody had ever thought of anything like this. Sure, there were prime ministers, but prime ministers were subject to the whims of the crown or possibly parliament, depending on how you looked at it in England. There was no precedence for something like the presidency of the United States. It just didn't exist. It was something completely new. And as they discussed it, they didn't start by discussing how it would be elected. They didn't discuss what its powers would be. They didn't discuss, the military. They didn't discuss any of those things to start with. They knew what they were creating was a position that could be very easily abused, that could be very easily subsumed in power, and that if we were not careful, could become a de facto monarchy. And so they actually started the discussions about whether or not they were going to have a presidency with literally, how do we get rid of the president if he's a problem? Benjamin Franklin may have said it best. Well, there's two ways to get rid of him. You can impeach him or you can assassinate him. And since we really don't want to go down the assassination route, we're kind of stuck with impeachment, which was a process with which they were well familiar from their English history and English past. Impeachment had been around for quite a while, and it made sense. But it's also important to understand this fact above all else as we continue this discussion. Impeachment is a political effort, a political function, not a criminal function. In other words, impeachment has nothing to do with laws other than the Constitution. It doesn't have anything to do with the legal codes of the United States. It is a purely political function. We don't like the president because he has done this, 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 the other. High crimes and misdemeanors, whatever that might mean. And believe me, it's not as clear as you think. It's purely political. There is a second thing you need to understand is that there is a tradition in the United States. It's kind of surprising when you think about it, because one of the things that we believe more than any other country in the world is that no one is above the law. Right? If you were to ask 100 Americans, I think 100 Americans would agree with that, at least philosophically. They may understand that it doesn't functionally work always that way, but philosophically, no one is above the law. Since no one is above the law, it's kind of surprising to learn that we have a longstanding policy, a longstanding tradition in this country, that we do not criminally indict sitting presidents. If we have a president accused of breaking a law, we do not criminally indict them while they are the sitting president. This is simply to remove the political element of it. You could very easily turn a criminal indictment into a political weapon. We saw this, was it last year or year before last, in Texas, when the sitting governor of the state of Texas was indicted on what turned out to be very spurious and meaningless charges that were intended to politically interfere with what he was doing. And you could argue that they accomplished it or not. It's really, up for argument as to whether or not they did. But we don't permit that when it comes to the presidency. If we have a president who commits a crime, who actually commits a crime, we do not indict him. We impeach him. And in some cases, we impeach him even if they didn't commit a crime, we just don't like the guy. And so we file for impeachment. We have a trial. That's happened in our country's history. We don't have a long history of impeachment when it comes to the presidency. In 1861, this nation basically ripped itself apart. Now, this isn't a discussion of the history of the Civil War. That's not really what we're getting into here. But In 1861, some of the states offered up resolutions of secession and declared themselves having left the United States. They were no longer part of the United States. They were going to go their own direction. To that end, they formed their own government. And as a part of that government, which was a confederacy, they began to flirt. Well, they didn't flirt. They formed militaries and laws and constitutions and that sort of things. But in the case of the government and the military, they began to assign positions. They had a presidential election. They had senators. They had congressmen. They had military officers. And they all swore the same oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the Confederate States of America. And the war went on. And as you know, at the end of the war, they lost. Subsequent to that, the Supreme Court declared that they had never actually really seceded, because you can't. The Supreme Court ruled that the Union is permanent and eternal and cannot be divided, cannot be done. And so there was a big brouhaha in the post-war of the Civil War as to what to do with these officials of the Confederate States of America. So you had everything from Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy. You had Confederate senators, you had Confederate congressmen, and you had Confederate military officers. And if you're paying attention to history, you will know that many of those officers went on to serve quite ably and quite successfully in the United States Army post-Civil War. In fact, one of them, Joe Wheeler, was a cavalry officer in the Confederacy, eventually made the rank of brigadier general in the United States Army, and was fighting in Cuba during the Spanish-American War. And at one point, the Spanish were running away, and Wheeler urged his men on to go get them Yankees, go get them damn Yankees. And someone had to pull him aside and say, hey, General, we're not fighting the Yankees anymore. We're fighting the Spanish. Oh, yeah, forgot. Just got caught up in the heat of battle. Each one of these officers that joined, that were allowed then to serve in the United States military, and in fact, each member of the Confederate government, in order to serve in any capacity post-Civil War, were required to raise the right hand and take a loyalty oath to the United States of America. As a part of that, they were also told that if they had served in the Confederate government, i.e. Congress, Senate, something along those lines, Congress passed a law saying that they were banned from ever being a part of the United States government. They were completely disbarred. They were not, the benefits of citizenship did not apply to them. They were thrown out. They were all of these, not even the loyalty oath would expunge that. And as in essence, they were, disrupted, and they certainly were punished in ways that other people perhaps were not. After the war, President Johnson, one of the things that he did that really stuck in the craw of Congress and was part of the reason for the impeachment that would happen later on to him, was he began to grant pardons to former Confederate officials. One of these guys was by the name of Augustus Garland. He was an attorney from Arkansas. He was a lawyer from Arkansas and had been a Confederate senator from the state of Arkansas. He went before the Supreme Court of the United States and argued that this law was a bill of attainder and ex post facto, which unfairly punished him for the crime for which he had already been pardoned. In other words, the president had pardoned him, and therefore he was being punished despite the pardon, and the law itself was unconstitutional. The Supreme Court decided at 5-4, they ruled that the law was in fact a bill of attainder and an ex post facto law, meaning punishment after the fact. The court ruled that he was beyond the reach of any punishment of any kind because of his prior presidential pardon. Now, that's very important. The court made it clear that there is no punishment of any kind. You cannot punish this guy for a crime, if it was a crime, and that's another debate, downstream, because he's been pardoned of that crime by the president of the United States. Following me here? So consequently, we have this precedent now of what a pardon functionally does, and we have this understanding of the president's power to grant pardons as basically plenary. I can never say the word. Much as the president, current President Trump, has argued that foreign affairs are within his realm without any review or oversight or any balance and check from anywhere else. He has total power in that area. He has argued that. It has been well established that the presidency has that same power when it comes to pardons. There's nothing, no law that can limit them, nothing else that can do this. And of course, the president then issues pardons, but only in cases where they are offenses against the United States, and only where they do not affect, or in the cases of, as it says, impeachment. Boy, does that raise some issues as well. The pardons, as you know, are sweeping and they are complete, and they don't even have to be specific. When President Ford pardoned President Nixon, he caught a lot of flack for that. Even Republicans were furious at the time. I remember many people that I knew that were pretty hardcore conservatives being absolutely angry about Ford pardoning, not just pardoning President Nixon, but the scope with which the pardon covered, because it wasn't for a specific crime. It wasn't for the crime of a conspiracy to cover up Watergate. It was for any and all crimes that he may or may not have committed as president of the United States. Psh, everything gone. Which meant that even some of those, and there were those who wanted to charge him with war crimes for the Cambodian thing, were out of luck. They just, everything went away. This actually made it into one of the first episodes of That 70s Show, which was pretty good in its early days. I didn't care for it later on, but President Ford comes to the town as candidate Ford. He's running in 76, and they choose Red Foreman to ask a question because they think he's a pretty reliable guy. You know, he's a pretty hardcore Republican and pretty conservative, and they figure if they let him ask a question, it'll be something, you know, innocuous. What do you intend to do about unemployment? This, that, the other, and at the last second, Red throws his card out and says, "Yeah, why? How could you pardon Nixon? How could you do that?" And that's kind of the attitude that the whole country had at the time was, "Well, this seems politically hanky panky-ish," and there you have it. So we come to this argument now as to whether or not President Trump, who has been on Twitter, not kidding, claiming that he has the absolute right, if necessary, to pardon himself. All of this came out of the discussions over the continually ongoing Russian investigation. By the way, at noon today, Tim Preuss is taking that on, so you want to tune into the P99, catch that. Tim has a lot to say about this Russian investigation and where it's going and what it's doing and why it's doing it. And again, much of what he has to say speaks to the fact that this is why we do not indict sitting presidents, because whether you agree with Mr. Mueller and his investigation or not, there's no way to get around the fact that it smacks of politics. It really does. You can't get around that. And so to avoid that element in our criminal investigations, we as a people do not indict sitting presidents. So those of you who are hoping that Mr. Mueller will indict Trump, you probably hope in vain. The only way he would be able to do that would be to violate 200 and some odd years of precedent and tradition. We impeach a president. We impeach an officer of the court officer of the court. We impeach a politician, and then we charge them after the results of that impeachment are complete, assuming that they're found guilty and removed from office. So this question then comes in. Can the president pardon himself, yes or no? And this, as I said earlier, is not as clear-cut an answer as you might think. You might say to yourself, and as I said earlier, whether you think it's true or not is almost exclusively based on your politics. If you are a Trump supporter, you believe that he can. If you are a Trump hater, you say that he cannot. And I guarantee you this, above all else, if this were President Obama or President Clinton or President Carter, it would be exactly the opposite. The people who today are saying he can would say he can't, and the people who are saying he can't would say he can. It's almost entirely a political question. Almost entirely politics-based. Almost entirely set on what you believe about the President of the United States. Is that a bad thing? I don't know if it's a bad thing or not. I don't know if it's a good thing or not. It speaks to what I was talking about earlier and the fact that so few of us are willing to consider everything across the board. We're unwilling to sit down and analyze things. And we're unwilling to accept that the premise, the conclusion of the premise might disagree with what we have already decided in our minds. If you think that he can, are you going to be willing to accept if the ultimate decision of this is he cannot? And if he cannot, are you willing to accept the decision? If you believe that he cannot, are you willing to accept the decision that he can? I think you begin to see the start of the problems there, and you begin to see the start of the issues that are involved. There are those who are claiming that President Trump is being unprecedented and that this is outrageous, and the idea that he would even say this is beyond the pale. It's not. It's been done before. Presidents have long claimed that they have plenary powers across the board and that they cannot be challenged. And quite frankly, with the kind of people you're dealing with as president, for the most part, now not all of them, some of them were doormats, I'll give you that. Millard Fillmore, doormat. Warren Harding, doormat. Some of them, however, because of their egos and because you're talking about an office that requires someone who believes that they have been chosen to act a certain way, to enforce certain things, to do certain things, there is a belief that I can do what I want. President Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, the second one, notorious for his attitude about what he could and could not do as president of the United States. He learned the hard way that may not work that way. Voters get a little unrest. They get a little restless about that sort of thing. Even if you don't get to the point of impeachment, if you're running around acting like a king, the voters don't like that. Andrew Jackson was seen by much of the country in the same way. Now, we celebrate Jackson. We think of him as a great president. But the reality is that he really saw himself and was mocked as such in the political cartoonage of the day as King Jackson, King Andrew the First. There were many people who saw him taking that attitude of, I can do what I want, particularly after certain Supreme Court decisions where he's famed in history for saying something that he didn't actually say, which was, you know, the Supreme Court's made its decision, now let it enforce it. He didn't actually say that, but his actions more or less indicated that that's how he felt about it. He actually took that particular ruling and used it in his favor to pressure the Cherokee tribes, but that's a story for another day. But there were many people who felt like he was being very imperial in his presidency. And in the early 1970s, of course, there was much the same feeling with Richard Nixon. He's an imperial president. I remember very distinctly and read again many years later, Doonesbury, as I've told you before, is one of my favorite cartoons. I'm not a progressive liberal. Neither am I a alt-right conservative either, but Doonesbury always, well, up until the mid-80s, always kind of, mid-90s, I guess, always kind of bemused me. I always enjoyed it because it was political satire, and despite the fact that Gary Trudeau was, in fact, a progressive liberal, he tended to go after anybody and everybody that, that needed to be going after. And so I kind of enjoyed it. But his Nixon cartoons are particularly poignant and particularly instructive, I think, today. And in several of those, the entire cartoon consists of him just building a stone wall around the White House with flags and banners and you know, the castle-type flags. And the implication being that this was an imperial presidency, and that was often said, this presidency has become like an empire. This guy thinks of himself as above the law. He's beyond anything in the middle of all this Watergate thing, and he was stonewalling everything, and so the stone wall was being built around the White House. There was a lot of discussion about that fact. I clearly remember some of those discussions. I clearly remember people who supported Nixon quite vehemently being very upset about those things. Why? Because they supported it. If it had been a Democrat doing the same thing, if it had been Johnson doing the same thing, they would have been furious about it. But because it was their guy doing it, they felt like they had to support it. It's political in nature, folks. It's not legal. It's political. This is the thing to keep in mind. And when President Nixon sent his personal attorney, in the case of U.S. versus Nixon, to the United States Supreme Court in July of 1974, his attorney actually argued, the actual words he used were, the president has instructed me to tell you, the Supreme Court, that the president is as powerful as Louis the 14th, just 4 years at a time. He has all the powers of a king, all the plenary powers of a king, but only 4 years at a time. In other words, he has to be reelected in order to continue to exercise those. And this did not go over well, as you can imagine. Here was a president of the United States, through his attorney in front of the Supreme Court of the United States, admitting that he believed himself to be imperial, that he believed himself to be a king. And it wasn't long after that that the impeachment process has started, because we're not going to have that. It's not why they started, but it had a lot to do with it. And so when we turn to President Trump and we see him making statements like this, how does it make you feel as an American? I have the absolute power to pardon myself if need be. Beyond the obvious questions, how does it make you feel? Take who you support and what you believe politically out of the question. Does it concern you at all when a president says, I'm as powerful as Louis XIV, just 4 years at a time, or I have the authority, the power to do whatever I want to do? Those are questions you have to face in the eyes. You got to look them right in the eyes and go, what am I? Who am I? And why do I feel the way I do? And unless you're willing to do that, it's just going to be a big old argument to have passed. It's Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. It's Constitution Thursday. Chat room is open on YouTube. Text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. And, of course, the email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. Stay with us, back right after this.
For a good, uncomplicated way to exercise, take a walk. At any age, walking is one of the best ways to keep your heart fit and your joints limber without the injuries that jogging or some aerobics can cause. Ask your shoe salesman for a shoe that's designed for walking. And ask your doctor to help you plan an exercise walking program that's right for you. Soon, you'll be on the road to better health.
A message from the Will Rogers Institute, WRInstitute.org.
Being around too much loud noise like a leaf blower or rock concert can cause permanent hearing loss. And once it's gone, you can't get it back. Hearing loss is the third most common chronic health condition in the U.S. Almost twice as many people report hearing loss as diabetes or cancer. The louder a sound is, and the longer you're exposed to it, the more likely it will damage your hearing. Repeated exposure to noise can cause stress, anxiety, depression, high blood pressure, heart disease, and many other problems. Hearing loss from loud noise at home and in the community can be prevented. Avoid noisy places. Use earplugs, protective earmuffs, or noise-canceling headphones when near loud noises. Keep the volume down when watching TV or listening to music and using earbuds or headphones. Get your hearing checked and ask your healthcare provider how to protect your hearing from noise. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/vitalsigns.
They'll challenge your authority because that's what kids do. But this car is your territory. And in here, your word is law. So when you say you won't move until everyone's buckled up, you won't budge an inch until you hear that click. Never give up until they buckle up. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council. For more information, visit safercar.gov/kidsbuckleup.
Science Underground with your host, Anissa Ramirez.
Today on Science Underground, how honeybees are turning into zombies. I'm Anissa Ramirez, and this is
Science Underground.
Biologist John Hafernick from San Francisco State University noticed something. The bees near his office were acting really strangely. They flew around erratically and they walked around awkwardly. He put one of these bees into a vial. It died. But then something strange happened.
The vial was full of little brown pellet-like things, which are the pupae, kind of like the chrysalis of a butterfly, of the fly that causes zombie-like behavior in bees.
Pupae is a scientific term for baby flies. They hatched from the inside of the bee, just like that movie Alien. So what happened? When Ford flies inject their eggs into honeybees, their eggs contain a parasite, which turns honeybees into zombie bees, or zombies. The parasite from the fly's eggs took over the bee's body. So what's happening to the honeybees? We still don't know. Scientists are scrambling to find out if all honeybees are turning to zombie bees across the country. So they set up a website called zombiewatch.org, that's ZOMBEE watch.org, where anyone can report zombie bee sightings. So far, zombie bees have been found on the West Coast in California and Washington State, and on the East Coast in Vermont and Pennsylvania. If you see one, say so. Honeybees are important to us because they pollinate many of the fruits and nuts and vegetables we enjoy. Without bees...
Well, we'd have to like a lot of wheat and corn, I guess, the things that are wind-pollinated.
And let's not forget honey. No honeybees, no honey. The U.S. consumes over 400 million pounds of honey in a year. Honeybees are amazing creatures, and they make our lives a little sweeter. And here's one way that everyone can help keep bees buzzing. I'm Anissa Ramirez. And this was...
What's up, Whitey?
Hey, Scotsman.
We're from the Ale Evangelist Show, and you're listening...
to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Radio Network.
Constitution Thursday here on Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show, Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Make sure you check us out at podcast99.org, where you'll also find the Ale Evangelist Show, Jay's Politics Blog Podcast, which I believe is now called This Week in U.S. Politics, Tim Preuss, Lawless Chat, a few others as well. That's at podcast99.org. Our page is on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDaveBowmanShow, or plausiblylive.com. So when I left you, we were asking the question about, after having gone through all the history of this pardon issues, we were asking the question about Donald Trump and where do we stand on Donald Trump essentially announcing that he has the power to pardon himself. Does he? Does he not? And again, it comes back to really your political position as to whether or not you believe that he does or not. I wish I could give you a clear, unequivocal answer, yes or no. But I can't. All you got to do is go read newspapers around the country, go read legal experts from around the country, go read blogs from around the country, and you will see the arguments one way or the other that those blogs, those papers, those people who are of the position of progressives or resistors who hate Trump believe that he cannot, and those that are on the opposite side believe that he can. And then you have this massive group in the middle that looks at it and goes, I don't know. And how often do we find ourselves in that position, constitutionally speaking? Because so few of us actually take the time to study these things, actually take the time to learn about them. What we assume to be so oftentimes turns out not to be the case. And we find ourselves wondering because all of a sudden now, things that we thought were pretty clear. I have a right to a trial by a jury of my peers. Have been ingrained in our minds so much that we just accept them as facts. Only to learn later on that maybe that is not the case. Maybe I don't have that right specifically to do that. We sometimes complain about it. Well, they change the rules or they interpret things. We talked about it with the Saxby fix. You can't be an officer of the United States and hold office at the same time. But Congress, you know, interprets words differently to mean different things and passes certain laws so that you can. And nobody bats an eye. We all just kind of go, well, okay. It says you can't, but you can, and who knows? And so is it any wonder that the vast majority of America is confused by this whole thing? When Richard Nixon sent Jean St. Clair to the Supreme Court of the United States to announce that he was as powerful as Louis XIV just 4 years at a time, he did not have the advantage, or let's not call it an advantage, he didn't have the circumstances that we have today. Even supporters of Richard Nixon, even people who thought that Dick Nixon was a good guy, and he may have been, were concerned about the appearance of what he was saying. They were deeply concerned that he was showing disrespect to the office of the presidency of the United States, and that by extension he was showing disrespect to the voters and the American people. Even if he were as powerful as Louis XIV when it came to these issues, saying it came across as very, very offensive. Even if it were so that he was that, it really bothered people that he said that because, again, this is the United States of America. And as educated or uneducated as our people are, we all agree on one thing, is that we are not a monarchy and we will not tolerate a king. We do not like that. At the end of the day, this is one of the reasons why the 22nd Amendment goes down in flames every time they try to repeal it. Every time we try to pass a law saying, why do we only limit this guy to two terms? We shouldn't do that. It goes down in flames because we saw the effect of that happening once upon a time. And we understood that power over time corrupts and power over time becomes entrenched. And it does, in fact, become essentially a monarchy. And we also understand that over the years, Congress has punted most of its responsibilities to the executive branch and has created this de facto monarchy in some ways that is as powerful as Louis XIV. I mean, think about it in some ways. President Nixon was the guy that brought into existence the EPA. The EPA is unfettered by congressional action for the most part. It regulates your environment, and if it says you're doing something wrong, you have no recourse anymore. And since the EPA works for the presidency, what have we de facto done? Same with education. Same with defense. All of these departments that have been placed in the executive branch by Congress are de facto ruled by the President of the United States. And in many cases, revenue. You have no recourse. Oh, Congress makes noises about, well, we oversee this, we control it, we're oversight, we're accountability, but how often does that really happen? How does a lowest learner happen if Congress is really doing its job of oversight? And what's the end result of that if Congress is really doing its job of oversight? So does President Trump have the ability to do this or not? What Trump has that Nixon did not have? Nixon had CBS Evening News, ABC Evening News, and NBC Evening News, and PBS's whatever it was back then. Was it McNeil Lehrer back then? I think it was. And that's it. That's where Americans got their news on television. Otherwise, they read the newspapers. And there was no element of discussion beyond that. President Trump has the advantage of apologists on television, on the blogosphere, to a lesser degree in newspapers, although not as much, but information where people who have insulated themselves across the board on both sides into what are known as echo chambers only hear what they already believe to be true. How many people who believe that he cannot pardon himself have read any of the arguments that he can? How many people who believe he can have read any of the arguments that he cannot? You see the difference? I mean, do you see the problem here? And so if you take the argument that I've always put forward, which is that 40% is basically right, 40% is left, and 20% is in the middle that, you know, kind of swings by issue, you can see the loggerheads we've come to here, because 40% of the people in this country have refused to even consider the idea that there might be another interpretation of this, whichever side you want to look at. You cannot today have a rational conversation with most people who are progressive about whether or not the president can, in fact, pardon himself. Even if you took Trump out of the equation and just said the presidency, today you can't have that rational argument. You can't have a discussion about it. You can't have a discussion if you believe that he cannot with someone who believes he can, someone who's pro-Trump. All of that has gone out the window, and we're left staring at this document going, what the hell does this actually mean? The president shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, comma, except in cases of impeachment. Impeachment, as we've discussed, is political. We assume then that this Russian investigation of Mr. Mueller, since it probably, it would violate tradition and it would violate precedent, will not result in a criminal indictment against the president. The only thing it could result in is what? Impeachment. That's the only thing it could lead to. Right? So, can the president pardon himself in the case of an impeachment process? Well, it would seem clear that the Constitution says no, but what if he pardons himself for something that's not being impeachable? And since impeachment is realistically off the table, I think most Democrats would admit today that they do not have the votes, certainly not in the House and not in the Senate. And even if they take the House in November, they still don't have the votes in the Senate to do it. Since impeachment is officially functionally off the table as a political weapon, could he then pardon himself if news came out that he did do something, but it wasn't impeached? You see what I'm driving at here? Purely for the sake of argument, if it came out that the president had, in fact, colluded with a foreign power, whatever the hell that means, and I, you know, that's another can of worms that we haven't even gotten into yet, that somehow or another, this was a political offense big enough to rationalize impeachment anyway, but the votes weren't there to do it, so the bill never advances. It never gets out of committee. It never even gets introduced on the floor of the House. Are we, quote, in the case of impeachment, unquote? Or have we still not reached there? Or have we reached there? I'll tell you what drives me nuts, and I try to kind of keep my personal set out of Constitution Thursday, but I'll tell you what drives me nuts is when the president keeps going on Twitter saying, if there was a reason to pardon myself, I could. I mean, number one, why even talk about it at all? But number two, what the hell does he mean by that? We've already discussed this week that the Supreme Court has said that your tweets speak to your intentions. Yeah. The thing that drives me nuts most about President Trump is that he never shuts up. Shooting himself in the foot by talking too much. And I get that that's part of his appeal. I get that. But there are times when sometimes I wonder if he's just doing it. Sometimes I don't know if he's doing it because he's dumb or if he's doing it because he's trying to spin people up. And I get people that tell me both ways. And I don't know. I seriously, honestly don't know. And in the case of this pardon thing, now you're sitting here going, well, why would he even talk about it if there was no reason to talk about it? Why would he even bring it up unless there was a reason to do so? And it's a reasonable thing to conclude now that we have decided as a nation that tweets speak to intentions. What a slippery slope there, huh? How far back do we go in tweets? How far back do we go in social media? How far? And if we can do it in social media, why can't we do it in, you know, anything else? We're all kind of agreed at this point that the NSA has been listening to all of our phone calls for the past, I don't know, 20 years. I presume that they have recorded them. What's to stop them from digging into that to look for our intent? Oh, Dave, the Fourth Amendment. They haven't paid any attention to that so far. Why would they start now? At the end of the day, does the president have his power to pardon himself? Well, pardons are granted after the fact. A pardon completely wipes out the legal effects of a conviction. It can be issued from the time an offense is committed and can even be granted after the full sentence has been served. It cannot, however, be granted before an offense has been committed. Why not? Why can't the president pardon himself in advance? Anybody? Bueller? Because then the president could be thinking to himself, I'm going to have my plumbers break into the Watergate Hotel and bug it and get information. And so I will pardon myself in advance. I will pardon them in advance, which essentially waives the laws. It essentially wipes out all of the laws involved. So you can't do it before, but you kind of get the impression, don't you, that there's an uneasy part of me that thinks that that's what Trump is saying. I don't know. I do know that people that hate Trump say he can't. People that love Trump say he can. And that wherever you go, you will find people of political persuasions. You can tell their political persuasion by where they stand on this issue. And there is no clear-cut answer. Neither has there been any case before the Supreme Court of the United States which deals with this. No president has ever even discussed this before, let alone tried it. Now, there are many people who believe that as part of his deal to resign, President Nixon worked out a deal with Ford to pardon him after the fact so that, you know, it would spare the country of trials and all that kind of stuff. There are many people who believe that, but there's no proof of that, at least not that I've seen. But we've never otherwise had a president even chat about this publicly, certainly not publicly. So what conclusions can we draw? Well, the conclusion I come to is that it is constitutionally ambiguous. I don't think that the framers ever actually considered the idea that a president would... I don't think it ever crossed their mind. In fact, as part of the discussion about whether or not a president could be removed, whether or not it should be, George Mason was arguing that the president's pardon power quite might sometimes be exercised to screen from punishment those whom he had secretly instigated to commit the crime and thereby prevent discovery of his own guilt, unquote. But beyond that, I know even George Mason said those who he instigated. He didn't say himself, even though by his implication, he was saying it was the president's idea. See the problem there? I don't think it ever occurred to them that a president might consider saying, I'm pardoned. Mostly, I think, because George Washington was sitting right there and they didn't want to have that discussion in front of him. But James Wilson, Pennsylvania's, argued that pardons for treason should be available and successfully argued that the power would best be used by the president, and that if there was a problem, if the president was involved with a treason or other high crimes or misdemeanors, impeachment was available. So then it was suggested that a pardon be approved by the Senate of the United States, and that was defeated. That was done away with. Because again, the idea that the president of the United States would do such a thing is far-fetched to them. It's far-fetched to us today. Until now. Now all of a sudden we have to take it into consideration, don't we? And we still don't have a real answer as to whether or not the president can. Does he have the power? Because again, remember, pardons cannot be issued until the crime has actually been committed. The president says, if necessary. So is he planning on committing a crime, or has he actually committed a crime, or is he potentially thinking about it? Or do you see why this is driving people insane? And by de facto action, if he issues a pardon, isn't he basically saying, I did this and therefore I pardon myself from it? How wise is that? You run into all of these questions and you don't, it can drive you nuts. And of course you can get really upset. You can be very anti-Trump and scream and yell that this guy's a crook, just like we did back when Nixon was president. Or you can scream, oh, he's the president of the United States. He has plenary power to do this. He always has had it. Why is it, if this was Obama doing this, you'd be fine with it, which is true. They would be. And drive yourself nuts because you just don't have an answer. Here's what I know. Here's what I conclude in the issue. And that is very simply that just because you can do a thing doesn't mean that you should. I don't know. The Supreme Court has never ruled. Congress has never passed a law because it's outside of their purview. It's a political, the Supreme Court probably wouldn't take it up. Why? Because it's political. Impeachment is political. And pardons are absolute. There's nothing in the Constitution to imply that they can be limited in any way, shape, or form. They cannot be. What would the Supreme Court have to decide? It's very possible that the presidency of the United States could, in fact, pardon himself. The process by which you would have to get to that would be a ginormous Charlie Foxtrot. Think about the actions that would have to take place to get a president to pardon himself for the commission of a crime, a high crime and misdemeanor against the United States of America. Think of what it would take to get to that point. Not the least of which is the president would have to basically admit or, you know, be caught red-handed having done that. Is that even a remote possibility in this Russian investigation, this Mueller investigation, in any way, shape, or form, reasonably on the horizon? That definitively, without any question, without any discussion whatsoever, this has happened. I don't think so. I don't know very many people who do think so. I know some who think so, but they're pretty hardline partisan anti-Trump. Most reasonable people look at this and go, how would you know? It's like going to the North Pole. How would you know? How would you even know you're at the North Pole? Somebody told you? Well, that's good news. I do know this. If the president were to do this, it would create a ginormous Charlie Foxtrot. It would precipitate a constitutional crisis. In the sense that half the country would be furious, half the country would be cheering, people would be throwing rocks at each other, people against for, people for against, would be throwing rocks at themselves behind it, Congress would be in an uproar, the courts would be demanded, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? What's going to happen? And all ability to actually govern the United States of America would go out the window because we would be consumed by this new gate. You know, Watergate, Iran-Contra gate, rape gate, whatever gate you want to put in there. And so my conclusion of the matter is, even if you can do it, you shouldn't. You ought to have the honor of George Washington that if you actually did something, you should face the music for it and not use the powers of Louis XIV to imperially rule over the United States of America and force your way. But we'll have to wait and see, won't we? Could just be a gigantic troll, people. He could just be trolling you. In which case, we still don't know if he can or not. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman. This is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Listen live at podcast99.org. See you tomorrow, everybody, for a Friday episode of The Big Show.
Plausibly Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Network. To contact Dave directly, call or text area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. For more information or to hear past shows, go to www.plausiblylive.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.